So each of you has a lemon on the table in front of you, and of course that represents the phrase, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade. And that's sort of my theme about vitality today. It's what do you do when you don't feel it, when you're not connected, when you're in doubt or anger or fear, and something happens and it looks like all is lost. Because the degree of vitality that we have really influences the way we handle the various contrast of life. When stuff happens, and it does in everybody's life, nobody's without contrast. When stuff happens, you have to handle it. You have to do something. And there's always some kind of response that you give. And the whole lemonade thing is, you know, lemons are sour, but we can put sweetener in there and we can make them taste good. Some people actually eat lemons. That is disgusting to me. I remember one situation that happened when I was in my 20s and I was dating. I was dating a marine biologist in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, who had a little sailboat, and he and I used to go out sailing on the weekends. And this afternoon we were out in the middle of the bay, and it was probably September because the water was warm enough to be submersed in without dying. it wasn't too cold, it was warmer. And we were sailing, and all of a sudden he did something. I don't know how to sail, but I used to crew for him, and he would tell me what to do and I would do it. But he wasn't the greatest captain in the world. And he did something and our little sailboat capsized. And here we are in the water, and I just watched my purse with my car keys in it sink to the bottom of the bay, and I'm floundering around in the water, and I said to him, okay, what do we do now? And he said, stand on the keel. If the two of us stand on the keel, we'll uplift the sails. So we swam around the boat and stood on the keel, and nothing happened. The mast was stuck in the mud. And so I said, okay, now what do we do? And he said, I am so sorry. I didn't mean to do that. I wish I had done this other thing. And I said, that doesn't matter now. Now we need to think, what do we do next? And we were lucky because the motorboat came by a few minutes later and pulled the boat to the shore, where we were able to dry the mast and ultimately able to sail home. So it worked out, but I was like 4 hours late getting home to my mother, and she was all worried about me and stuff. And because it was, when I was 26, I wasn't living with my mother. I was. I do want to explain that. I was staying at her house on Cape Cod for the weekend, and she was looking for me at a certain time for dinner, and I didn't come home for dinner. So anyway, the moral of the story was, 6 months later, he said, I voted you in my life the person most pleasant to capsize a sailboat with, because you didn't want to blame me. You wanted to know, what do I do now? And that was a real revelation to me about what there is in the vitality of life. When I thought about that story, it's like you have a problem present itself that you didn't anticipate. You need to focus on the solution, not the problem. Because a lot of people focus on the problem and discuss, you know, here we are in the water, why are we in the water? And whose fault is it we're in the water? And, you know, how are we going to prevent this from happening again? When really, at that point, you just want to get out of the water. That becomes the first priority. Because even in September, when the water's fairly warm, it's still pretty cold in Massachusetts. So everything in life is about what you do with the now moment. What can I do now? What's next for me? And ultimately, the vitality that we experience life is about the fullness of our being. And we are so much bigger than we think. We are God expressing. And I don't know about you, but nobody taught me that when I was little. I was taught that children are supposed to, you know, be seen and not heard, and that the function that I had in life was to obey the rules. And as I grew up, the rules got harder and harder and bigger and bigger, and until ultimately I rebelled and said, all of these rules that other people are creating in my life aren't working for me. I got to find my own rules. But that level of empowerment sure wasn't there early on in my life. I didn't feel like I could necessarily respond to what was happening next from a positive place. In spite of my sailboat experience, I had a lot of other experiences where I did not focus on what was next. I focused on what was wrong with me or someone else or the past or whatever. And I got really caught up in negative thoughts and negative emotions. And so we're bigger than we think. And in quantum physics, they say, quantum physics isn't only stranger than you think. It's stranger than you can think. And I think that's true about the vastness of who we are as well. It's not only bigger than we think, it's bigger than we can think. But we can stretch our ability to comprehend the truth of who we are every single day. As we contemplate this bigger, higher, expansive nature that is the truth of who we are, the non-physical self that is so much more than we personally feel sometimes in our doubts and our fears. So there is a creative tension between feeling I can be more of who I really am and relaxing into knowing that I'm always enough. And sometimes we get caught up in this ugly place of I should be more because I'm not enough. Anybody ever feel that? I was playing the All Game with some of my friends. It's a game of consciousness last Thursday, and I picked a card that said, you believe that there is something special for you to do, but you don't know what it is. And I recognize that sometimes I feel that. You know, there's something for me to do, but I don't know what it is. And I'm sort of like this, you know. I want to go, I'm ready to go, but I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. And so we had a discussion about that and the game. And several friends contributed valuable ideas. And one said, when you think you're special, you separate yourself from everyone else. And you forget about the oneness. And that's certainly true. When I try to be special and more, I sometimes separate myself from everybody else and I start comparing, well, am I as good as that person or not? And comparison never helps because we're not here to be compared to other people. And that brings me back to Kate, who said, people are for loving, not for comparing. That, including me, I'm for loving, not for comparing. I'm here to love myself, not to compare myself to anyone else. And then someone else said, well, we think that we're special because everyone is special. And that was the reading that David did from Ernest Holmes about our unique divine individuality. Each of us are here with unique talents and abilities, unique life stories, unique experiences, unique desires that we are here to live out, to experience, and to love, to bask in, to bliss out in. So that sense of I should be more because I'm not enough, ultimately that's something we want to let go, because we always can be more, but the truth is we always will be more, because this life is eternal, it's infinite, we are immortal now. So we are going to forever be finding new ways to express life. And I have the opportunity right now in this moment to express more life, to express more love, just by loving this moment, just by loving myself. So why don't we all take a breath and take a moment and look around this room and just feel a sense of love for somebody here, for everybody here, if you can, for at least one person here, that you could feel that warmth in your heart, feel that blessing of being aware of the love that you are. In this moment, there is love in this room. And in this moment, just by our awareness of the love that we are and the love that we have to share, there is a little more love that we're aware of here right now, do you think, than there was a minute ago? Can you feel the love?
Yes.
Can you feel that, you know, you are in this circle of love that everyone's offering to contribute to? Now, it's easy when we're here, because we're sitting here, the temperature's pleasant, the room is nice, and we've got coffee and tea and water and lemons. We've got lemons, we know we're all right. So we can relax, but you know, there are those moments when we feel the doubt, when we wonder if we're enough, when we feel separate. And coming back into connection is sometimes as simple as taking a breath, as noticing, I don't feel right in this moment. And when people start studying this philosophy, or the Abraham philosophy, or any metaphysical philosophy, what often happens is that when they feel bad, they panic. Because all of a sudden, they have had the feeling of feeling good. When I was 35, I got divorced, and I hadn't felt good for years. I didn't remember what it was like to feel good. I'd been chronically depressed for a long time. And I had a therapist who said to me, you have a right to be happy. And I said, no, I don't. It was foreign to me at that point in my life that I had a right to be happy. And it's foreign to me now to think back on that time and think, I used to feel that way. You know, I really used to believe that I was responsible for serving everyone else, but my happiness was like the last priority rather than the first. And I've come to believe that my feeling of connection, my feeling good, my being connected to my inner being, to my source, is the highest priority in my life. That I'm no good to anyone else until I'm stable and secure. Abraham tells the story of you're walking along a mountainside and somebody, you, falls over the cliff and you're hanging by one hand on the edge of the cliff. Do you want the person with you to be sympathetic, or do you want them to be strong and powerful and capable of helping you move over back onto the path? You know, sympathy doesn't help so much when you capsize the sailboat or you fall off the cliff. You want some help from somebody who's strong and secure. And that's part of the reason in Science of Mind we have practitioners. Because Judy and I, Gail and Mary Rose, who was trained to be a practitioner at one time, although she hasn't been serving as a practitioner necessarily, she's had the practitioner consciousness all along. So the practitioner consciousness is knowing, as it said in our reading, that the practitioner always knows that all is well because there's nothing else to know. And in our training in becoming practitioners, we are drilled into the consciousness that it's all God. It's all good. It's all grace. And I've told the story many times of how when I was watching a David Hawkins video, he was talking about the map of human consciousness and how people experience consciousness all the way from ground level, which is guilt and shame, which is a level that is like unable to support life. You know, people get suicidal when they feel guilty and shamed in their lives. And as you go up the scale, it goes through fear into rage and anger and frustration into courage, which is the difference between negative states of being and more positive states of being. It takes courage to move beyond where you are. And so claiming that courage, you move then into non-judgment, and you find a way to stop comparing yourself to everyone else, to start realizing that everybody's okay, that life is okay, that things are all right. You move into acceptance that maybe life is all right. You move into then understanding and reason. You look at the logical outcome of situations and you recognize that many times in your life you've gone through negative experiences, negative emotion, and you've come out the other side and things have gotten better. And as you move from reason, you move into love. And reason is in one direction, and they often say in metaphysics that to move into love takes a different skill than moving into reason. Maybe it takes accessing our heart, maybe it takes accessing the other side of our brain, but you don't necessarily understand your way to love. You simply become love and allow the love to flow around the understanding, and that's kind of what compassion is. It's understanding with love. And so as we move up the scale ultimately to joy and to bliss, we finally reach oneness where we realize that God is self and all is one. And God is everything and all is one. So what I was experiencing that day when I was watching David Hawkins' video as he's explaining this whole entire thing is that the love that we are, the grace that we are, is part of all of it. And he said that day, he gestured to this entire map, numbered from 1,000, which is oneness, the Buddha, Jesus consciousness, to zero, which is shame and guilt. He said, it's all love. And I almost fell off the chair. Because intellectually I knew that it was all God. But I hadn't wrapped my heart around it's all love. It's love expressing his shame. It's love expressing his fear. It's love expressing his anger. It's love expressing as courage. It's love expressing as non-judgment. It's love expressing as acceptance. It's love expressing as understanding. It's love expressing as joy. It's all love. There is nowhere love is not. Love is omnipresent. And omnipresent love is like bigger than we can think, too. But we can find more love than we found the day before every single day. There is no limit. There is no ceiling on the amount of love we can find. Love expands endlessly and incrementally. And as we allow that fullness of our being, that love, that omnipresent love, if omnipresent love is omnipresent, then love is where we are, then love is what we are, then allowing that love to pour through us, out at anything. I gave a talk once on root beer and how I was walking in the grocery store, and I came upon the idea, the fact in that moment, that A&W root beer was on sale. And it was $1.29. And I remembered standing there that my mother used to take us out for A&W root beer floats when I was a kid. There was one of those drive-ins where they roller skated up to your window and put a little tray on the side and served you. And that was like the specialest treat of all, that we'd go to A&W and we'd have the girl roller skate up to us with our root beer floats. So I'm doing this whole reverie about a childhood bliss with the A&W root beer, and then I look over and Diet Coke was on sale for 99¢. And all of a sudden I'm doing this debate in my head, root beer, Coke, root beer, Coke, root beer, Coke. And I'm looking at it, and so all of a sudden I woke up and I realized that following my bliss in that moment was 30¢ more. And I thought, wow, that's the cheapest bliss I've ever had. Well, I had to buy the ice cream too, but it was awesome to have that powerfully positive memory about my childhood, because sometimes I don't have positive memories about my childhood. So it was wonderful to be in the presence of that beautiful memory inspired by that root beer and to realize that for 30¢ more I could have that at home. I could milk that experience. And so I want to close today with a little reading from Abertown. That's here somewhere. No, there's one more story I wanted to tell you before I close. I had a friend who also made his transition last year. His name was Vita Bergman. I called him Vitae because I took Latin when I was in school, and his name was spelled V-I-T-A-E, which in my Latin class was pronounced Vitae, which means life. And Vitae Bergman was one of the most vital, alive people I ever met. Carrie knew him too. And he was something else. He was 77 years old, and I would sit with him and he would tell me 10 or 12 projects that he was working on or about to start or that he was so enthusiastic about. He was just totally engaged in his life. He was thrilled to be alive, and he was absolutely out there in every place that he could be. Well, over time, I finally heard the story that Vitae Bergman's original name was Mort Bergman. Anybody know what mort means in Latin? It means death.
Wow.
And he changed his name from death to life. Isn't that interesting? I just thought that was awesome. And he had a little hat that he wore that said Vitae all the time. He wore his Vitae hat most of the time, even in the house sometimes. Because he was affirming life. He was affirming life. And the last time I saw him, as usual, he told me, we sat at breakfast for 2.5 hours, and he told me all about all of these projects that he was involved in and set up some things with me that we were going to do together. And 2 days later, I heard he'd had a heart attack, and he was in the hospital. And 2 days after that, he had a second heart attack. And he suddenly knew he was going to die. And he set up the most conscious death I have ever heard of, because he didn't question it or blame it. He embraced it. And he said, I'm going to die. I'm going to have this extraordinary experience of dying. And I want everybody to share this with me. So he invited all his friends to his bedside, and he was the spiritual leader of a community. And bunches of people did a 24-hour vigil with him for the rest of the time he was alive. He lived about 2 more weeks, a week and a half. And they danced, and they sang, and they played music, and they prayed, and they meditated, and they did rituals, and they laughed, and they told stories, and they collected memories, and they had fun. And he approached death from a position of vitality and life. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
I mean, I am blown away by people who show me what's possible. And Vitae showed me what's possible in dying. You know, he simply did this thing that was so remarkable in the decisions he made about dying. He didn't stop and second guess it and say, this shouldn't be happening. He didn't fight it. He could feel that, oh, it's time for a new adventure, and he approached it with curiosity and joy. And I love that people give me that potential. You know, I would love to approach my death with curiosity and joy, knowing that there is only life, that vitae continues, that his legacy is powerful on the planet. Lots and lots of people loved him and were inspired by him, but he continues. His presence continues. You know, when I'm writing, sometimes he talks to me and he tells me how he feels and how good life still is. And I so appreciate that. So, now I'm ready to finish. This is a quote from Abraham from the September 11th, 2010 workshop in Denver. And they said, oh, well, when Abraham talks about being in the vortex, they mean feeling happy, feeling joyful, feeling connected to Source. They said, imagine if you just stumbled into the vortex and then maintained and then practiced the vibration of being in the vortex long enough that you affected a stabilizing shift in your vibration, your entire world, everything else from that moment would shift for you. The conversations that would come to you for the rest of the day would be shifted because of that shift in vibration. The memories that you're pondering would be different because of the shifting you've accomplished. Your digestion would shift. Your metabolism would shift. Your vitality would shift. Everything, everything. The parts of your body and the way that they relate to one another and your relationship with every person, place, or thing would shift because you took the time to shift into a different vibrational frequency. How about that? You do it by recognizing, feel pretty good. What is it in this moment that feels so good? Why do I feel so good? Feel so good. It feels so good. This feels so good. Why does it feel so good? What is it about this moment that feels so good? Is it this air? Is it what I'm seeing? Is it what that person just said? Is it what I was thinking about because I was breathing deeply? Why do I feel so good? Want to stay here. Just stay here a little longer. Just milk it a little longer. What feels so good about this? Why does this feel so good? Is it the music? Yeah, today it was the music. Is it something I saw? Is it something you said? Is it something I thought? Why does this feel so good? I like how this feels. I want to stay right here. I love this feeling. I love this feeling. Just milk it. Just milk it. Just milk it. Just milk it. Just maintain the vibration of it. You'll slip from it because life will cause you to, but just that little bit of staying there has changed your relationship with who you are forever. You will not be the same person after that much in the vortex focus. So we come to study group and we focus in the vortex for a while, and we remember who we truly are. We remember we are enough, and we remember there's always something more. But we don't need to fret about it or fuss about it. We just need to be, because we are enough. We are love, just as we are. So love something, anything, root beer. It's okay. Lemonade, if you'd rather. The sound of the bells. Or the sound of the music. Love something, love someone. Pet your beautiful little dog. And remember, life is good. And so it is.
And so it is.
So it is.
Ah, okay.